once said, if you don't read the newspapers, you're uninformed. If you do read them, you're misinformed. My hope for today is that the assembled press here will do their best to rectify that statement. My name is Richard Gage, AIA, member of the American Institute of Architects. I'm a licensed architect for 22 years. I'm the founder of the nonprofit organization Architects and Engineers for 9/11 Truth, which came into being almost 4 years ago when I was first confronted by the piercing of the myth surrounding 9/11. Just as science finally ended a century of myth about what killed King Tut, AB 9/11 Truth is using science to end the myth of the government's official conspiracy theory about the cause of the nearly 3,000 deaths of innocent Americans on 9/11. The head of Egypt's Supreme Council of Antiquities, Zahi Hawass, told USA Today, "It's fascinating for us to try to use science to trace truth. Likewise, the architects and engineers for 9/11 Truth are using science to trace truth in an historic detective story that is rivaling the search for the reality about King Tut." Well, in his book, The Ground Truth, why does John Farmer, the senior counsel for the 9/11 Commission, state that at some level of government, at some point in time, there was an agreement to not tell the truth about what happened? Well, that lack of truth is backed up by our architects and engineers with quote after quote on our website, such as from petition signer Alfred Lopez, who states, "I'm a structural engineer with 48 years of experience in all types of buildings. I agree that fire did not cause the collapse of the high-rise buildings. The most realistic cause of the collapse is that the buildings were explosively demolished." And from architect Dennis Holloway, "It was the discovery of molten steel in the debris that made me realize that something was really wrong about the mainstream media coverage of the towers." And from architect Kerry Lewis McCarthy, "It's very hard to understand the complete lack of concrete rubble in the debris field. Even had the basements filled with concrete floor slabs, debris, there should have been a stack of floor elements at least 9 or more stories above grade. I haven't been able to reconcile the promoted theory of collapse with the way I know buildings to behave." Today, I'm quite pleased to announce that now we have more than 1,000 architects and engineers signed on to the AE 9/11 Truth petition, demanding of Congress a new and truly independent, unimpeachable investigation into the destruction of the 3 World Trade Center skyscrapers on 9/11. Of our 1,037 architects and engineers are from the U.S., and the other 20% represent 44 other countries. We hope that this number of professionals will resonate in the face of what has been a substantial quantity of ad hominem attacks, such as wacky conspiracy theorists, particularly in the earlier years of 9/11, the 9/11 Truth Movement. But even yesterday, Glenn Beck called us nasty, dangerous, monstrous. We don't offer conspiracy theories at AE 9/11 Truth, just scientific, forensic facts whose implications, albeit, are quite disturbing. This press conference is an effort to be of service to the public in our capacity of more than 25,000 years of collective, professional, technical experience. Why are we risking our licenses, our reputations, our time, and our energy? This morning you're going to find out. We are also joined by over 30 volunteers and tens of thousands of supporters around the world. Today our supporters are holding this press conference in 31 cities, 19 states, and throughout the world in 5 other foreign countries. In the U.S., we're talking about Los Angeles, San Luis Obispo, San Diego, Santa Cruz, Sacramento, Woodland Hills, Portland, Seattle, Tucson, Las Vegas, Austin, Dallas, Denver, Chicago, Willowbrook, St. Louis, Muskogee, Bozeman, Milwaukee, Madison, Hartford, Gainesville, Tampa, Boston, Newton, Concord, Dover, Hackensack, Flemington, and Newark, New York, Washington, D.C., Alexandria, Virginia, and in across overseas, Wellington, New Zealand, where the architects and engineers for 9/11 Truth held their press conference already. And you can see the results here. Brussels, Lausanne, and Pully, Switzerland, as well as Sydney, Australia. In Canada, we're in Victoria, Vancouver, St. Catharines, Hamilton, and Ontario. And we probably have more that I haven't even heard about. 14,000 supporters make a big difference in any kind of a movement where they are as dedicated as these. Our organization, Architects and Engineers for 9/11 Truth, attends architectural conventions, most recently in San Francisco, Washington, D.C., and Richmond, Virginia. We're educating hundreds of architects and engineers, and sharing the research systematically has resulted in new signatures in the petition and additional support for a new independent investigation. We've been interviewed by the media around the world on this topic, including several dozen interviews and articles in print, such as World Architecture News, Silicon Valley Metro, and in Japan, Asahi Shimbun, Focus Money magazine in Germany, TV appearances including the BBC, Canadian Broadcasting Corporation, National Geographic, Fox TV, and PBS in Colorado. Over 140 radio interviews, including Coast to Coast AM, KPFA, KGO, KABC, and several aired debates with supporters of the official conspiracy theory. We presented 8 senators from Japan, the Japanese parliament, in November, all of whom expressed support for us as well as for a new investigation. After careful examination of the official explanation of the destruction of these 3 buildings, along with the eyewitness testimony and forensic data that was omitted from the official reports, we, along with other professionals in the 9/11 Truth Movement, have concluded that a new independent investigation into these catastrophic events is both necessary and essential to the preservation of our democracy. Even the FBI has weighed in, citing that our work is, quote, backed by thorough research and analysis, writes Michael J. Heimbach, Assistant Director of Counterterrorism Division. So what's going on here that even the FBI can see, but the mainstream media and our other government officials cannot or will not? We will present a very brief outline of the explosive evidence compiled, after which you'll have the opportunity to have your questions answered. More detailed information, of course, can be found in our DVD, 9/11 Blueprint for Truth, The Architecture of Destruction, available on our website, AE911Truth, and provided to you in your press kits. Let's see what a typical controlled demolition looks like. Here it is. The way they do this is by placing explosives synchronistically timed, floor by floor, through the building, so that we bring the building down symmetrically, vertically, at almost free-fall acceleration, using the building's weight to do much of the destruction. So the result of a typical controlled demolition is a sudden onset of destruction at the base of the structure, a straight-down symmetrical collapse into its own footprint, because demolition waves remove the column supports. This results in a free fall acceleration, almost, straight down through what was the path of greatest resistance. A total dismemberment of the steel structure is resulted, where it's broken up and ready for loading and shipment. A minimal damage to adjacent structures is always good. Sounds and flashes of explosions are heard and seen by witnesses. We have enormous clouds of pulverized concrete burst from the explosives. We have squibs, or explosive isolated jets, occurring at different points in the building. And of course, we have chemical evidence in the debris pile, evidence of cutter charges. All of this is direct evidence of explosive destruction, and guess what? Fire can't create any one of these, let alone all 10. If we have additional supporting documentation, like government documentation, quite helpful, expert corroboration, foreknowledge, and video documentation, foreknowledge because it takes months to plan and execute a controlled demolition. This is all proof, beyond a reasonable doubt, of controlled demolition. Do we have any of these characteristics in Building 7? Most Americans, most all architects and engineers, in fact, know nothing about the third worst structural failure in modern history. Building 7, a 47-story skyscraper, a football field away from the Twin Towers, was not hit by an airplane, and yet, at 5:20 in the afternoon, it collapses in the manner in which we'll see. We noticed that the North Tower came down and some of the debris from it landed all the way over onto Building 7, but here it is standing through the morning and the afternoon, and it comes down at 5:20. Let's see if there's any of the characteristics of explosive controlled demolition in Building 7's destruction. Starting with, do we have a sudden onset of destruction at the base of the structure? In the DVD that you have, you'll see plenty of witnesses that describe sounds of explosions. Do we have a straight down symmetrical collapse into the building's footprint? Let's listen to Dan Rather narrate this for us.
Now, here we're going to show you a videotape of the collapse itself. Now go to videotape the collapse of this building. It's amazing. Amazing, incredible picture work. For the third time today, it's reminiscent of those pictures we've all seen too much on television before. A building was deliberately destroyed by well-placed landmine to knock it down.
Now, Dan never repeated these words on mainstream media after that day. In fact, most of us, hardly any of us, have seen Building 7 coming down. It won't be played. Why? We'll see. Let's take another look from West Street. Symmetrical, straight down.
It's gone, man.
Let's bring it back up. Penthouse falls 1 second before the rest of the building. I'm not quite sure. Let's take a look side by side. We have Building 7 on the left and a known controlled demolition on the right. Is there any similarity? Is there enough similarity to warrant a new investigation into the possible use of explosives? Why did it not? Why did this not look at the most obvious hypothesis? These are the fires that are said to have caused the destruction of this building. 8 to 10 fairly small, fairly scattered fires. This one on the 12th floor, which is cited as the initiation of collapse. But we have a statement from NIST in Appendix L that says they have photos that show that that building, that fire went out in that area at least an hour and a half before the building collapsed. So that area was cooling already. This is a huge problem for the official story. How do we bring a building straight down into its own footprint? We have to remove the column supports, 24 of them in this case, and all of them within a tenth of a second of each other. Any deviation in that pattern, and the building will begin to tip. The question is, can fire, especially those fires that you saw, be responsible for this level of precision? Big problem for the official story. Let's see how fast this building comes down. In just 6.5 seconds, at free fall acceleration, as fast as this piece of thermite is falling through the air, is how fast this building comes down in the first 100 feet. Free fall acceleration. The building is accelerating, getting faster and faster, straight down through what was the path of greatest resistance. How does that happen? We have to remove all those columns. And it appears that we have the total dismemberment of the steel structure. A 47-story skyscraper, molten steel frame resisting, columns, beams welded very tightly, very, very robustly together, collapses like a house of cards into just about four stories. They all had to have been cut. Sounds of explosions heard and seen by witnesses, you'll hear and see those on the DVD. Enormous pyroclastic-like clouds of concrete suspended in the air, fueled by the expansion of these gases from the extremely hot temperatures associated not with those 8 to 10 small fires, but with something else that we're going to be looking at in a moment. Racing 35 miles an hour in every direction away from the building. At this point, I would like to invite Dr. David Ray Griffin up to provide additional perspective. Dr. Griffin will bring additional perspective this morning on the questionable science of NIST. Author of The Mysterious Collapse of the World Trade Center 7, why the official story, why the official report about 9/11 is unscientific and false. Dr. Griffin is a professor of philosophy of religion and theology, emeritus at Claremont School of Theology and Claremont Graduate University, the author of 36 books, 9 of which are on the subject of 9/11. His most complete statement about 9/11, the new Pearl Harbor revisited, was Publisher Weekly's Pick of the Week in 2008. His work on the 9/11 issue has prompted his nomination for the Nobel Peace Prize, Dr. David.
Comments. I will just read. A recently discovered paper on conspiracy theories by Obama appointee Cass Sunstein has rightly been receiving a lot of negative attention. But this paper also makes an important contribution, pointing out that an idea cannot be rejected simply because it is a conspiracy theory, because there are true as well as false conspiracy theories. We can decide between a true and a false theory, of course, only by examining the evidence. Sunstein says that the government's 9/11 conspiracy theory, according to which the attacks came about because of the conspiracy between Osama bin Laden and 19 members of Al-Qaeda, is true, while the theory of the 9/11 truth movement is false. Sunstein says that the government's 9/11 conspiracy theory, according to which the 9/11 attacks resulted from a conspiracy between Osama bin Laden and 19 members of his Al-Qaeda organization, is true, while that of the 9/11 truth movement is false. But he provides no evidence for either claim. The 9/11 truth movement, however, has presented an enormous amount of evidence to support its claims. For example, in my 2009 book, The Mysterious Collapse of the World Trade Center 7, I have shown that the report on this collapse put out by NIST, the National Institute of Standards and Technology, is unscientific and false. It is unscientific because it can make its major negative claim that the building was not brought down by explosives, only by ignoring multiple testimonies about explosions going off in the building, by ignoring a piece of steel from the building that looked like a piece of Swiss cheese, even though fire could not have gotten anywhere close to the temperature needed to melt steel, by ignoring particles of metals in the dust that could have been produced only by extremely high temperatures, and by ignoring the existence of nanothermite, a high explosive. The NIST report is also unscientific because it can make its major positive claim that the building was brought down by fire only by telling rather obvious lies. For example, that a huge fire was burning on the 12th floor at 5 p.m. even though in its 2004 interim report, NIST had a photograph showing this fire to be completely burned out by 4:45. and that the building collapsed because its girders were not connected to the floor slabs with shear studs, even though that same 2004 report indicated that the girders were connected with shear studs. Then this study is unscientific, finally, because it affirms a miracle in the sense of a violation of basic principles of physics. Only months before NIST put out its final report, its lead investigator, Shyam Sunder, correctly stated that free fall would have been physically impossible in a fire-produced collapse. But after high school physics teacher David Chandler demonstrated in a YouTube presentation that the building came down in absolute free fall for over 2 seconds, NIST affirmed this empirical fact while still maintaining its fire theory of the collapse. It therefore affirmed what it had previously acknowledged to be impossible. The government's theory about the collapse of World Trade Center 7 has therefore been disproved as thoroughly as any theory could be. This is one of the reasons why 1,000 licensed architects and engineers are calling for a new investigation. And let me add that this is a big week for 9/11 truth. Just this week, 6 major stories have appeared in the Danish press based on interviews with Professor Niels Harrit of the University of Copenhagen's chemistry department, who was the lead author of the paper on nanothermite that Stephen Jones' group had initiated. And so the story is getting a major coverage in a European country, none in the United States thus far. Secondly, a symposium has just appeared in a major American social science journal called the American Behavioral Science. It is now online. This symposium is about what they call SCADs, State Crimes Against Democracy. Mm-hmm. The symposium begins by saying, the silence of due diligence regarding the official account of the 9/11 incidents continued being ignored by scholars of policy and public administration. This symposium also takes aim at the use of the term conspiracy theories to silence all criticisms about crimes originating from people in high places. And finally, I'll talk more about it this afternoon at the luncheon, but it talks about the incredible silence of the Academy in response to what happened to Professor Stephen Jones of Brigham University, who was forced out of his position simply because he wrote a scientific paper that disagreed with the government's interpretation of the World Trade Center collapses. Normally, this would cause an enormous row within the Academy. They said, aside from a peep from the AAUP, there was virtual silence. Thank you very much.
Were there pools of molten iron and/or steel in the debris of the Twin Towers and Building 7? This section applies to both. Here we see pouring out of the South Tower just minutes before its collapse, molten metal by any standard. The official story tells us that this must be molten aluminum from the melted airplane. But molten aluminum looks like molten aluminum. It's silvery. It does not glow bright orange and yellow in daylight conditions. Must be molten iron or molten steel. Who says this? As of 21 days after the attack, fires were still burning and molten steel was still running. This is attributed to Leslie Robertson, the structural engineer of the World Trade Center himself. And his associate, Richard Garlock, who says the debris past the columns was red hot, molten, running, saw pools of literally molten steel, says the lead contractor, the president of the company. And what do these gentlemen say?
Get down below and see molten steel. Molten steel running down the channels. Like you're in a foundry.
Like lava from a volcano. Well, the problem with all of this is that the fires, and jet fuel for that matter, which is a hydrocarbon, burns only at about 12, maybe 1400 degrees under ideal fuel-air mixture ratios. Molten metal, molten steel, molten iron doesn't begin to even be produced until over 2700 degrees, more than twice that temperature. What could possibly account for these extreme hot temperatures? We'll be looking at thermite, a likely suspect, which produces hot molten iron at 4,500 degrees Fahrenheit. And you'll see what thermite is exactly. It's used to cut through steel like a hot knife through butter. Do we have evidence, though, of thermite in the molten metal? Well, let's see what thermite is first.
An incendiary used by the military, thermite is a compound of iron oxide and aluminum, which when ignited, sustains an extreme heat reaction, creating molten iron. In just 2 seconds, thermite can reach temperatures over 4,500 degrees Fahrenheit, quite enough to liquefy steel. We know that open air fires cannot burn hot enough to melt steel. But metal had melted at the base of the towers. Appendix C of the FEMA report describes sulfur residues on the World Trade Center steel. The New York Times called this the deepest mystery of all. Sulfur slightly lowers the melting point of iron, and iron oxide and iron sulfide have formed on the surface of the structural steel. Sulfur used with thermite is called thermate, producing even faster results.
Well, this is very interesting. It turns out that there's chemical analysis done, performed on this previously molten metal. This chunk, for instance, a piece of which was sent to Dr. Stephen Jones, whom we'll be hearing from shortly, and he finds that this is predominantly iron. So he rules out aluminum from the jet plane, and it has abundant manganese. And so he rules out structural steel as a major component. So it's not melted steel. Where does iron come from? Iron is a part of structural steel, but this is not that. It came from some other source. We don't use iron anymore in building materials. And it has manganese and fluorine in abundance. This is quite peculiar because manganese is from the potassium permanganate, which is a commonly used as an oxidizer in thermite. And fluorine is used primarily in Sol-Gel type thermite charges. These together are the fingerprint of thermite. But what about all of that dust? Laid throughout Lower Manhattan, 90,000 tons of concrete pulverized to a fine powder, laid in a blanket 4 to 12 inches thick. Here's some here. It was sent to Dr. Jones, 4 separate samples, one across the street in an apartment, one on top of a skyscraper 2 to 3 blocks away, another one collected just 10 minutes after the collapse on the Brooklyn Bridge. What is so interesting about this? What do they find? Well, in all of the dust samples, not only the teams of scientists' findings, but R.J. Lee, an environmental consultant, and USGS find billions of these spheres. Well, how did they get there? And they're iron, interestingly enough. So they're previously molten.